You are listening to Carousel Radio.
Carousel Radio.
You're listening to Carousel Radio.
Broadcasting a creative voice of people with a learning disability.
Carousel Radio.
Carousel Radio.
My name is Jason, and welcome to Carousel Radio. This is not the fourth, but the third in a series of takeover shows, where we invite learning disabled artists from diverse communities to take over an episode of Carousel Radio. This is an opportunity for people from underrepresented communities to get their voice heard on radio from all around the world. In this episode, we welcome Matty Kennedy, an artist, filmmaker, and writer living and working in Glasgow. Also, the lead programmer of Carousel's Oscar Bright Film Festival, Matthew Hallett.
Carousel Radio.
You are listening to Carousel Radio.
Carousel Radio.
Hey, what are you doing?
Committing a crime. I'm stealing the show. Carousel Radio Takeovers. Carousel Radio Takeovers. This episode has been taken over by Matty and Matthew.
You are listening to Carousel Radio in conversation with Matty and Matthew.
So my name is Matthew Hallett. I'm the Oscar Bright's leading programmer for the festival. I made four films. My first one was in 2006.
I'm Matty Kennedy. I'm an artist and filmmaker living in Glasgow. I've been making films since 2013, and I first became kind of acquainted with Oscar Bright since 2015. I had taken part in a group art exhibition in Glasgow, and it was called the I Am Art exhibition, which was part of a Glasgow festival. That's what it used to be called. It was a queer arts festival in Glasgow. I think it's called Outspoken Arts Festival now. That was actually where I screened one of my first films. Well, the first film that I made, which was called What Is Femme Anyway? And it was on like a tiny little sort of computer monitor in the corner of the gallery. And it was Gary Mack. He was the main guy that put together the exhibition. And he kind of encouraged me because I was like, oh, I've got this short film to go with my collage piece, because originally I wasn't a filmmaker. I was actually a collage artist. I didn't do films originally. I think I went down to Toys R Us one day and I basically got a small kids camcorder for like £20. And that camcorder allowed me to make my first two films, What Is Femme Anyway and Just Me. And both of those films were shot quite close together. My twin brother, Andrew, he helped me with the camera work because I kind of thought, well, I'm the subject of the film, so I need someone to do the camera work for me.
I guess you could say that I myself represent a minority. The fact that I'm gay and have learning difficulties has shaped the very core of my being and how I deal with life on a day-to-day basis. I remember dressing up at around about the age of 7 or 8, thinking I was Doris Day in Calamity Jane. I'm now speaking as a 22-year-old who likes to cross-dress on the odd occasions.
After that screening at the gallery, I started then having a look out for festivals, you know, sort of the film festival circuit and all that stuff. And then I found out about Project Abilities Young Talent On Screen Film Festival. I sent them my film. I think it was Just Me. And it won an award, actually. It won a Best Experimental Film. And then after that, I screened at a queer feminist film festival in Edinburgh called Pussy Whipped, which was quite interesting. Yet again, quite an intimate crowd. It was 2015 when I first heard about Oscar Bright. I had submitted to the 2015 festival and they had accepted the submission. The only problem was I didn't have funding to go down to the festival. And then my mum basically spoke to me about it. She's like, if you don't get the funding from Creative Scotland, I'll put a loan down so that you can go. And I felt really, really scared because I'm like, I don't really want you to be getting into debt again, Mum. But luckily, we got funding from that. And basically, me, my twin brother, my big brother, Christopher, his friend, Tina, and my friend, Pauline, we all went down. And it was a really, really, really great experience. I mean, I was really, really nervous at first because I didn't know what to expect. I thought, well, this is my first time down here. I don't know what it's going to be like. Or, you know, like, I suppose it's like the usual stuff that goes through your head. Or are people going to be nice? Or, you know, am I going to make friends? Am I going to, you know, am I going to make a community here? And, you know, is that going to be possible? And obviously, then I met Matthew. I remember, I think it was the first night. I just remember it was a night screening and I sat down and then Matthew sat down beside me and we just started chatting, you know, just started shooting the hay. And that was kind of the beginning of our friendship. We just started talking. We basically just started talking about how we got into filmmaking and, like, obviously being LGBTQ+, how that kind of, that commonality that we had with each other and loads of other stuff. We just talked throughout the night, really.
Yeah, at the Oscar Bright Film Festival in 2015, it was at Brighton Dome back then and felt quite relaxed just chatting to Matty over dinner. We talked for quite a bit, which was nice.
Yeah, because we talked about our films because I think I'd seen one of the Sparkle films. I think it was the black and white one.
Yeah, that's it, Sparkle, yeah.
Yeah, that's a really good film.
Sometimes a big struggle, really. And then I get my makeup. It feels like almost that I'm like acting like a famous person and I don't have to worry about anything anymore. I know, it just feels like there's no more frustrations or anxieties because they've all gone. Oh, it feels fabulous, yeah. Yeah. Well, I look and feel fantastic. Yeah. And I'm Mrs. Sparkle and it's just brilliant.
I like how you spoke about how Mrs. Sparkle brought out confidence in you and how, you know, to just believe in yourself and to not be afraid. I like that.
That festival, I got dressed up as Mrs. Sparkle. I got chatting to Matty and she said, just do it. So I just did it.
What is the Oscar Bright Film Festival?
Oscar Bright Film Festival is a leading festival for people with learning disabilities, a creative platform around the world, around the UK to showcase their work.
Fascinating. And how long has it been going on for?
It started as a one-day festival in 2004. And so, yeah, it's 2022, we're 10 years old now.
As to my recollection, so it started in Brighton, but then it gained worldwide fame, didn't it?
Yeah, it built up reputation over the next 5 or so years. Yeah, more and more people got to hear about us and word of mouth.
You also rose up through the festival, didn't you? Because you started off as a committee member and then you...
No, I started off in 2007, winning Cooking with Matthew. And then I was asked if I'd like to join the committee. So that's how it came about.
Okay, Cooking with Matthew. It was a film you made. What inspired you to start making films such as Cooking with Matthew?
I just got bored one afternoon. I went for a soft drink at the pub with my support worker and I haven't made any films before. And then he had a bit of background about filmmaking and then we started storyboarding and it went on from there.
So what's Oscar Bright been doing over the past couple of years?
We've been going despite the pandemic.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, we've been working on Zoom.
What do you think, Manny? Do you think Zoom streaming has any potential in the future for films made by people with a learning disability or other minorities?
Well, in terms of accessibility, yes. We're going to be living with COVID for God knows how long.
Mm.
Without that kind of accessibility, immunocompromised people, they can't enter physical spaces. Mm. So Zoom might be the only way that they can see films, or not just Zoom, but online events in general. So, yeah, I think it's a good idea. And even after the pandemic's over, people might still use it.
Because not everybody can always get out to the theatre, can they? Or the place where they're going to.
Yeah, definitely. Because as I said, access is an issue for a lot of people.
Oh, I agree.
People don't always think that. I'm in a high-risk household, so I've not been able to go out for the last 2 years of my life. I think the last public event I went to was March 2020, if memory serves, and that was at the Glasgow Women's Library. Since then, I've just been reading, like, loads. I mean, I've been inhaling books, like their air. I've started up an Instagram account, which has helped me. I've been basically reading and watching loads of films. That's all I've been able to do, really. I mean, I haven't been able to access art, in a sense, for myself. I haven't been able to access material, you know, to make things, because obviously in order for me to access material, I'd have to go outside. And I haven't been able to do that. You know, certain family members have, you know, they have underlying health issues. So I've had to be really, really careful. As I said, I've been reading and I've been watching stuff as just a way to keep my sanity in check so that I'm not, you know, necessarily climbing the walls or the ceiling for that matter.
So as we are talking about COVID at this point in time, I'd like to ask you, Matthew, how has the pandemic affected you in these past 2 years?
Well, you know, it's been pretty rubbish, but just to be honest.
10 out of 10 would not recommend. 10 out of 10.
Yeah, but, you know, as Matty was saying, doing stuff to keep your sanity intact, like going for a walk and then watching a box set on the telly, or picking up another book, put the kettle on again and listen to the radio on and have a Zoom with the family.
So both of you guys have told me about how much you've been reading during the pandemic. Are there any good book recommendations you can recommend for me?
And now, it's time for recommendations. We've got two books, two films by Matthew and Maddie.
The first film that I've got is a film made back in 1992. It's called Blue Black Permanent by Margaret Tate.
I'm flying.
And it's the first Scottish feature directed by a woman, apparently. I didn't know that. But I'll read you the blurb at the back of the DVD just to give you about what the film's about. This haunting and magical film moves between Edinburgh and Orkney as it tells of a photographer's attempt to come to terms with her mother's death through her childhood memories. Filled with flashbacks and dream sequences, it's also a film about Islanders' relationship with the ever-present sea. But yeah, I love Margaret Tate. You know, I've watched a lot of her short films. And actually, weirdly enough, I first saw this film at the Glasgow Women's Library. Like, oh God, it's got to be about 10 years ago. I am 31 this year, so 10 years ago I first saw it at a screening. And it was really, really good. Plus, it's her only feature film that she directed. And the second film that I've been rewatching it, it's a film from, I think it's 1970. It's a film called Wanda by Barbara Loddon. Yet again, it's her only feature. It's the only feature film that she made. And it's about a sort of, I don't know what you'd call the main character. She's like a deadbeat wife who's kind of not really good at, you know, I suppose she's not really good at being a wife, you know.
Come home from work, she's lying around on the couch, kids are dirty, there's diapers on the floor. Sometimes the kids is outside, running around, nobody watching them.
Wanda Goransky.
Listen, Judge, if he wants a divorce, just give it to him.
She basically gets a divorce from her husband. He kind of takes the kids, and she's basically left alone. She's like a drifter in some way now after the divorce is settled and stuff. And then she kind of enters into this bar one night and she finds this robber, you know, this guy that's robbing the bar. He knocks out the bartender, and he starts raiding the cashier. And she's just sitting at a table drinking beer. She basically just goes along with him for the ride. It is kind of like a relationship. It's quite a distant relationship because obviously the guy, the crook, he doesn't want to get too attached because he's obviously got business to do. But at the same time, Wanda's like, well, you're the only person in my life right now. And without ruining the film too much, it kind of, basically everything goes awry at the end and it does end slightly in tatters for Wanda. But it's a beautiful but a really haunting film. I recommend it to each and every one of you. It's on YouTube. I think you can watch it direct from there. I think I'd type in like something like Wanda 1970 and you'll find it. That's my movie recommendations. On to the books. The first book that I've got here is Jean Rhys, Good Morning Midnight. The title of the book, Good Morning Midnight, is actually taken from an Emily Dickinson poem, which I found pretty interesting. I didn't know that at all. Do you want me to read a little paragraph from the page?
Why not?
These people all fling themselves at me because I am uneasy and sad. They all fling themselves at me larger than life, but I can put my arm up to avoid the impact, and they slide gently to the ground. Individualists, completely wrapped up in themselves. Thank God. It's the extrovert prancing around, dying for a bit of fun. That's the person you've got to be wary of. Yeah, I just love this book. Sasha Jansen, she's the main protagonist, and she's basically a bit of a lush. She likes a bit of a drink. She orders like a Pernod at every cafe or every bar that she's in. And she kind of wanders from like hotel to hotel. I suppose she's kind of what you would say. She's like a literary drifter or a literary wanderer. And yeah, I love Jean Rhys. So that's a book recommendation right there. And the second one that I've got here is The Lady of the Little Fox Fur by Violette Leduc. She's a French writer. And this is like a tiny little book. It's like a wee novella. I think it's like just over 100 pages long. I'll read you the blurb just to give you a little flavour of what the book's about. The beautiful, tragic, whispering story of an old lady, destitute, all dignity gone, wandering through the haunting streets and quays of Paris. It's basically an old woman wandering through the streets of Paris and she finds like this little fox fur that's been abandoned in like some trash heap. And she basically treats it like an actual animal, like it's her only friend in the world. It's kind of weird how an object can have that power over someone. Well, I read you a wee bit from this book. Her bowels cried out their need, and the sound was like fragments of jazz thrown into a dustbin. One must eat to live. The tiniest insect will tell you that. Her battered hat, her shady green coat, her tattered umbrella suggested she do something about it. Do what? She answered, pretending she was a bewildered child. That's my choices. Enjoy.
Recommendations. Books. Movies. Matthew. Maddie. Yes, how about you, Matthew? Have you got any recommendations for us?
So I saw this in lockdown, but I saw this at the actual cinema pre-freaking COVID. It's called The Greatest Showman, and it's a must-see by everybody. It's Hugh Jackman. It makes you feel good.
I can't just run off and join the circus?
Why not? I mean, you clearly have a flair for show business.
For show business?
Mm-hmm.
I've never heard of it.
Because I just invented it.
When COVID has been pushing you to the limit mentally, physically, emotionally, it's a real good film. Okay, my second film has got Will Smith in it. It's called The Pursuit of Happiness.
I met my father for the first time when I was 28 years old. When I had children, my children were going to know who their father was.
Yeah. All through the film, he doesn't give up. He's got a boy, he's got a son in it, which I think he plays his son in real life. And then he gets to where he wants to be, some firm. And it's really good film, and he just doesn't give up through all adversity.
Don't ever let somebody tell you you can't do something. Not even me. All right?
All right.
I mean, during lockdown, I only bought two books, and they were both cookery books. One titled Posh Sandwiches, and the other one was Street Tacos. I had a weird Mexican phase.
My first book, she's also a chef. She was in Great British Bake Off. It's called Nadia Hussein, Finding My Voice. All right, I'll read you a small extract. To everyone with a voice, those in pursuit for a voice lost, a voice they dream of having, the voice they wish they had, because life happens and with it we lose, we gain and we grow. It's just really good. You know, my second book is an autobiography. I like to read about other people. So it's Graham Norton, So Me. Childhood dull, oh yes, to the outsider looking in, those were cross-dressing, the bedwet in the moving house 13 times. But for those little boy wearing a sister's dress in a house that would never be home, that's a sense of thrill. I was lonely as a child, but the time I did spend a great time on myself for the reasons we tend to live in the middle of nowhere. Good, I read it some time ago, but through lockdown, I read Will Young, done a quite bit of John Grisham. That was good.
Carousel Radio.
You're listening to Carousel Radio. This episode has been taken over by Matty Kennedy, an artist, filmmaker and writer, living and working in Glasgow, and the lead programmer of the Oscar Brights Film Festival, Matthew Hallett. Here is a spoken word piece by Matty Kennedy, previously aired on Carousel Radio in 2015.
It all started with a small red notebook that I had. My mind started running wild with questions I was asking myself. I immediately started scribbling down notes. Where is our history? How do we find it? How old is the learning disability arts community? Has the learning disability arts community been fairly represented historically? Representation. Is our history being archived? And if so, how would the learning disabled community access it? Where would our histories be kept and stored? Should we start documenting our own individual histories as learning disabled artists? There's so many questions to ask. Question your history. What about the generation of learning disabled artists who came before us? Are their histories being looked at? Where does the conversation start? With ourselves, or with members of our community? With family and friends? With learning disability arts organisations? Is the history of the learning disability arts community and its potential archives a creative and cultural issue? Does this particular subject get spoken about enough within our community? Should we start up our own individual archives? Has our history as a creative community always existed in some form? It must exist in some form. It has to exist in some form. But it doesn't end there. What about looking at the histories of the learning disabled communities in general? This is not a validation game. Not everybody with a learning disability is an artist. 6% of people with learning disabilities in England are currently in full-time employment. Talking about archives and our histories in general could be a way of opening up more conversations between us and our community. What was it like to be a person with a learning disability in society in the 50s, 60s, 70s, etc.? How did society treat us back then? Has the general history of the learning disability community been documented in the history books? Artifacts and objects, whether it be records, films, books, visual art, they show that we have the power to document our lives as people within society. Through making music, writing, filmmaking, visual art, we as a community are leaving a time capsule of objects behind. What about future generations? Will they be able to seek out our history? We have a culture and it is there for us to explore. So let us start exploring and find out where our history is.
The red notebook that I'm referring to in the piece, it was like a red notebook that my mum had given me one day, because I had just started writing about archives and history, and how the subject of archives and history weren't really present within the learning disability arts community. And I remember having a conversation with my mum, like, there's not enough conversations happening within the learning disability arts community about where our history is, where our archives are, like, why isn't this happening? And I could feel myself just blowing a lot of steam off because of it. And my mum, she sat down and she just said to me, you know what? It's great that you're talking to me about this stuff, but you need to get it out to a wider audience, because at the end of the day, like, you don't want it to become an echo chamber where you're just relaying it to the same people that you know in, like, your tiny little bubble. Like, you need to get it out. So that was when she gave me the red notebook that I reference at the beginning, and I just started writing down questions. I don't know, my mind just started running wild. As I said in the piece, I just started scribbling down these questions. I'd got my laptop out and then I'd basically transferred what I'd written and then I'd posted it. I think it was somewhere like Tumblr, just to let everybody see. And yeah, I think my interest in archives and history, it comes from the sort of queer and feminist communities, the sort of arts communities there, because I think this has got to be like the third or fourth time I've referenced the Glasgow Women's Library. I don't know why, but they've got a lesbian archive, but they've got loads of archives, the Women's Library. And that's kind of where my interest began, like sort of researching archives from different communities. And I'm kind of thinking, well, hold up a minute, stop the bus. Where are the learning disability arts archives? Why isn't anyone talking about this? There are communities out there, marginalised communities out there, who have got their archives, they've got their histories to look at and to talk about and to have these forums or these conversations that they can have, which is great. Don't think for one second that I'm browbeating it down, because I think it's great. I just think, well, what about us? I think that's where my anger and my frustration stems from.
Do you see Oscar Bright as a link to archiving for learning disabled work?
Yeah, I mean, I see Oscar Bright as like a vehicle for archives, like sort of history building. You're building on your own history as a festival, like, because obviously Oscar Bright's been going for a really long time. So who knows, Oscar Bright might have work from when they first started. So yeah, I definitely would agree with you on that. I think Oscar Bright has its own vehicle for history building.
Yes, it's very important. It's the only creative platform some people in the learning disability community have to showcase their work as a platform, not just the UK, but all around the world and Europe. So the festival starts on the 16th to the 21st, and join us across screenings across different parts of the UK. We start at Depot in Lewes, Fabrico in Brighton, and Dukes at Comedia, and installations by One Bum Cinema at Brighton Jubilee Library. It's going to be great. It's going to be good, really good.
So, Matthew, considering that it's going to be a four-day event, is there going to be any highlights you would recommend?
Yeah, I think the first few days at Depot and Lewis would be quite great, just to go somewhere different than we haven't done before.
No, I had a really fun experience with Oscar Bright once. I went to a marketing event and they gave me a bunch of business cards to hand out. So I hand someone, they look at it and like, ah, Oscar, nice to meet you. And then I had to explain to them that my name isn't Oscar. The weird thing is I didn't learn from that, and it went on like 3-4 times. That was definitely a fun evening. So, Manny, you're introducing a screening in Glasgow. Would you care to tell me about it?
Yeah, I'm going to be introducing a screening at the Glasgow Film Theatre on the 21st of March. It's going to be basically Oscar Bright Film Festival's best of the festival. I think there might be a Q&A afterwards. And I'm basically going to be the Glasgow ambassador for the festival. So I'm representing Glasgow for Oscar Bright. It should be fun.
Yeah, we hope you enjoy every minute of it.
Yeah, I hope you enjoyed our good old banter. Because it was a good old chin wag.
You have been listening to the Carousel Radio special takeover episode. Would like to give a special thanks to Matty and Matthew. You can see films by Matty Kennedy on Vimeo.com. Matty is spelled M-A-T-T-I-E. Please go check that out. The Oscar Bright Film Festival runs from the 16th of March to the 22nd of March in Brighton, Lewis, and across the UK. From the 16th and the 17th of March, we'll be screening at the Depot, Lewis. 18th and 19th, we'll be screening at Fabrica Art Gallery in Brighton, Duke Street. And on the 21st, we'll be screening at Duke's Comedia in Brighton. Throughout the entire festival, we're going to have installations at the Brighton Jubilee Library. There will also be screenings across the UK. For example, on the 16th at Tyneside, Newcastle, at the 17th, Quad, Derby, on the 20th, the DCA in Dundee, the 21st, Picture House at Fact, Liverpool, and Barbican, London, Story House, Chester, Glasgow Film Theatre, and Showroom, Sheffield. You can find out more about the upcoming Oscar Bright Festival by visiting oscarbright.org. One word, oscarbright.org. That is the end of our takeover series. In April, we'll be returning with our usual mix of music, stories, and poems from carousel artists. Although this time, we'll be featuring a guest presenter. We hope you've enjoyed today's shows and our series. Until next time, thank you for listening and goodbye.
This podcast is brought to you by Carousel, helping people with learning disabilities to reach their potential in the arts.